Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on February 11th, 2014 at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula, Montana. This edition of Tell Us Something features 11 storytellers telling a story based upon the theme, What Are You Waiting For? This week's story comes to us from Joshua Slotnick, author of the recent book of poems, Home Farm, available wherever books are sold. Josh's story is called Art, Love, and Other Acts of Bad Judgment. Thank you for listening.
Hello, hello. You guys have been fantastic. You've hung through a whole bunch of stories. You're on your last one. Last one. All right. So this takes place in 1991, way, way back when. I'm on a bus going from northern Thailand to eastern Thailand. It's a 17-hour bus ride. Now, the buses in Thailand are made for people who are about 5'7" tops, right? I'm 6'2". My knees are pinned up by my ears. Only 16 more hours to go. I've got across my lap a package. It's about 2 inches wide and 3 feet long. And I'm doing this 17-hour trek on a crappy bus through the night to go see my friend Paul. I was 25 years old at the time. Paul was 35, which for me meant he was impossibly old. Irrelevantly old. There's the first big mistake. I was going to see Paul because he had invited me. He'd sent me a bunch of letters. We communicated through letters back then. It was before electricity worked the way it does now. He had written me letters about this woman. They were just friends, but he described her almond eyes, the red-brown color of her skin, the jet-black hair. It was all he could talk about. I knew he was falling in love with this woman, and he wanted me to come and see her and see them because Paul was kind of an awkward guy. He never really learned to speak Thai very well. He had a big, giant forehead, a goofy smile. He was just socially not smooth. But he was really skilled. He was one of those process-oriented people who could bake bread and brew beer. I think he even did stained glass. Everything he did was precise and perfect and well done. In fact, about 6 months before this incident, or before this story, he and I and a bunch of other friends were on an island in the Andaman Sea, far away from anything else. I was chopping firewood with a machete. And the machete went through this stick, hit a rock, and bounced into my foot, completely missing the protective chacos that I was wearing. But Paul, being the kind of person that he was, had a first aid kit, and he cleaned it, and then he sewed it all up, and it was just perfect. And way out in the middle of nowhere, where everything should have gone wrong, everything was fine with my foot. Well, Paul and I were in the Peace Corps. I was on my way to see him. We'd been in the Peace Corps for maybe a year and a half at the start of this whole thing. The way the Peace Corps worked back then, they give you 3 months of training. It was great training, language and culture. They did a really good job. And then they spit you out and send you off into the middle of nowhere. They call that spot your site. I was at my site. For the first 6 months, I was so lonely. I'd never been so lonely. It was like the depths of loneliness. And I came up with a couple ways to stave off just deep depression. Art and exercise. So after school, because I was a school teacher, I would run for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I would do push-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups until I couldn't do it anymore. I would take a shower, eat dinner at the little cafe next to my house, and then go back up into my house and draw pictures or carve wood until I went to sleep, and I'd start all over again. In fact, that package that I had across my lap on my way to see Paul on the 17-hour trek, that was a wood carving. In the letter, the last letter he sent me, he asked if I would bring him a piece of art So I'd carved this thing 2 inches by 3 feet of all these bodies kind of entwining themselves going up this long stick. Well, those 6 months came to a close right at about the 6 month mark. This magical thing happened. I woke up and I could speak Thai. And it wasn't like I could order food better. I mean, I could really speak Thai. I could have relationships. I could chat with people. I could have friends. And my whole life just took off. I had friends. I did well at work. I had things I did on the side. All of a sudden, I just had another life. It was just in another language. But something else happened that I never would have expected. And to put this in perspective, I have to jump back a little bit. Actually, quite a bit. When I was a young teenager, my parents moved my sister and I from the suburbs of Washington, D.C. to Grand Forks, North Dakota. A good friend of mine, when he first met my mom, said, you know, you need to do some jail time. And she's a sweet person. I was the darkest man in Grand Forks, North Dakota, young man as a teenager, with olive skin and the Jufro, the darkest man in Grand Forks. In fact, the Taco John's in my town, my buddies called it Taco Josh's. They were so racist, they couldn't even get it right. Well, this intense feeling of difference and wanting, you know, I mean, an amazing feeling at the time. I so wanted to have blonde hair and blue eyes that parted on the side and have my name be like Nordstad or something, you know, so I'd fit in. This made me very uncomfortable with women. And I felt that I wasn't interesting and that they wouldn't want to talk to me. And I believed that maybe if I became impossibly handsome or a tremendous guitar player, that would work, right? Or really rich, well, then I would be interesting and women would want to talk to me. Well, that 6 month mark when I woke up and I could speak Thai, that was it. Wherever I went, I was in Thailand, right? There'd be a beautiful woman next to me at the bank, and I'd say, hey, how's it going? What are you doing? And she'd go like, oh, my God. They'd never seen a big, goofy white guy who could speak Thai, and they were super interested. This was like a superpower. Now, I was young, right? 23, 24, 25, somewhere in there. I'd studied philosophy in college, and I remember learning about ethics and morality, and it just seemed like crossword puzzles that were really hard and kind of fun to solve, but it didn't pertain to regular life. Oh. I got off the bus. Remember I was going to see Paul? I got off the bus, followed the directions, walked to his house. It was a house on stilts like all these houses in Thailand. I'm walking up the stairs, and there's a note on the door, and I'm halfway through reading the note, which said, Josh, thank you so much for coming. I'm really sorry. He had to go to another volunteer in a nearby place. It was an emergency. He was going to try and get back, make the best of it. And I just took this 17-hour bus ride. I was going to spend one day, one night, and take the 17-hour bus ride back and deliver my piece of artwork. I'm standing on the steps, and I hear my name pronounced in broken English. I turn around. There are the almond eyes, and the red-brown skin, and the jet-black hair. And she said in, you know, bad English, but she was trying, Josh Pon, she couldn't say Paul, Pon not here. And I just busted that shit right out, right? I could speak Thai really well. We went into Paul's house, waited for him for a little bit. He didn't show up. We got on our motorcycle, cruised around town, got some food, picked up some beer, went back to his house. He still didn't show up. We're sitting on this hammock inside. We sink towards the middle. We're drinking the beer. I'm translating National Geographic magazines, making her laugh. Big storm comes up. Thunder, lightning, the shutters are swinging. And she sinks in right next to me. And I looked over at her. And what are you waiting for, right? Now is the time to kiss the girl. And I didn't wait for squat, right? I should have been waiting for judgment, good judgment. But I kissed the beautiful girl. And Paul never made it back. I spent the weekend at her house. And then we met up in another place the next weekend. And the next weekend, this is one of these things when you're with this person, you feel like together, you want to tear each other's skin off, right? I was there for another 6 months, and we met up like this, and then it was time for me to go, and I worked in Asia, and I bounced around, and I just kind of let her go, right? There was one point in Thailand, I was in a cab in another city for work, and the cab driver looked back at me, and he's like, hey, you want to go to the nightclubs? I'll show you where this is and where that is. And I said, no, I'm going to this place for work. And he looked back at me, and he goes, you know, you can do anything you want. Not just male privilege, white male privilege, white male privilege with this crazy linguistic superpower laid on top of it. I could, and it was cool. I could do anything I wanted, and that would be fine. Because I never took any of that ethics and morality stuff seriously, I was kind of figuring maybe it was something that existed between people. Like if you roll into the top hat with your shirt off, they'll tell you, no, you got to go back right now, or you can't do that, right? I was in this crazy privileged position in Thailand. There was no other censoring my actions. I just did whatever I wanted, and I could do it really well because of that crazy superpower. So the whole thing's over. The Peace Corps's over. I do this big tour of Asia. I work. I do all this cool stuff. I'm back at my father's house, and there's two pieces of mail waiting for me. One of them is from my best friend, one of my best friends in the Peace Corps, Steve. It's a letter. Remember, we communicated by letter back then. Open it up. It says, the first lines, you are out of control. And then he listed all these things, these people that I had run through because I could, and no one stopped me. But that's, it wasn't their problem. It was mine. I didn't stop myself. And man, it just cut to the core because I so respected what he said, and I wish that I had seen it earlier. And next to that was a box, about 1 foot by 1 foot box. It shook. Pieces in there. I opened it up, pour it out. That sculpture I made for Paul. Cut precisely, perfect. Each piece the same size, spilled out onto the table and no note. What are you waiting for? You're waiting for an understanding that judgment and morality and ethics have to come from within. And unfortunately, I wish I could say, oh, I learned that lesson then, and then it was over. Now, this is something we all have to learn over and over again. So I'm going to do my best to wait some more. Thank you.
For your support of live storytelling and local art. Thanks to the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years. The Top Hat now serves food and offers, in addition to great music, comedy shows, performance art, and film. TopHatLounge.com. Haley Faust. Haley Faust is a graphic and media designer based in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. From concept to final design launch, Haley puts her heart and soul into your design project. HaleyFaust.com. Zoo City Apparel. Custom screen printing. ZooCityApparel.BigCartel.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people. RockinRudy's.com. Podcast production by Nathan Zavalny of Missoula Soundworks. MissoulaSoundworks.com. Thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcast, and especially to the storytellers Jeff Peepos, Gabby Grant, Joe Stone, Pat Williams, Jack Rowan, Chris Latray, Acton Douglas, Georges DiGiorgio, Ray Reshow, Luke Morgan Algeyer, and Joshua Slotnick. Find us on Facebook and Twitter The next Tell Us Something is scheduled for August 19th at the Top Hat. The theme, busting. We'll see you then.